Good evening. This is the Pacifica National Board Elections Committee for a meeting on January 15th, 2013. And our secretary, I'm Bob Lederer, the chair, and our secretary, Jane Gatewood, will now call the roll, please.
Okay, from KPFK, Ken Aaron. Lydia Brisson.
She's going to come on in a few minutes.
What?
She's coming out in a couple of minutes. I just called her. She had in the middle of something.
Oh, thank you. Fred Blair. Fred?
Present.
Michael Novick?
Present.
From WPFW, Ivan Alsame? Revlin Gold?
She's walking.
She's here. Okay, and Jane Gatewood is here. WBAI, Nia Bediaco.
Present.
Carolyn has asked to be excused. Bob Lederer.
Here.
Manashe Saba. From KPFA, Tracy Rosenberg. Tracy?
She just answered.
Maybe she muted.
Tracy, are you there? Well, I thought Tracy was here. Andrea Turner.
I don't hear her.
Okay, and I know Sasha Fuchon is here as a guest, continuing but not voting. KPFT, Teresa Allen.
Present.
Wesley Bethune. Wesley?
I could not get him.
Nancy Saibara Narasamy?
Yeah, non-voting.
Non-voting? Oh.
Yeah. Well, shall I get off the phone and try to call Tracy?
No, maybe she's muted. Or she probably answered because she thought Jane was calling the roll earlier.
Oh, she was on earlier.
Tracy was on earlier, but we don't have her now. So right now I only have 8 members present, but since Nancy just reminded me she is not a voting member presently, we may see. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Yes, we have 15 voting members, and we have 8 present, so we do have a quorum.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say that.
Thank you very much. Okay, so I sent out a draft agenda earlier, and let me read it out loud, and then we can discuss it. Number one is review and approval of available minutes proposed 5 minutes. Number two, decision on the next committee date for 10 minutes. Number three, a report from the National Election Supervisor, including questions and answers and discussion. I put 50 minutes because there's several items that have been raised by different people, plus things that we know that Terry's going to want to share with us. But the ones to definitely include are the current status of the KPFK staff election, the question of public availability of ballot images, the question of when the local election supervisor reports will be made available, the policy on term limits in the WPFW election, the policy on counting blank ballots for quorum. And those last two items, I would reserve 10 minutes for each to make sure that they don't get lost by other issues. So I would ask the timekeeper then to, you know, flag us when we get to those 10 minutes and 10 minutes. Okay, number four would be committee input on the job announcement for the 2013 National Election Supervisor position for 10 minutes. Number five, the process to evaluate the 2012 elections and to fix identified problems and a proposal to establish a working group for 10 minutes. Number six would be preliminary discussion of various proposals for sortition to replace elections. Can I ask whoever has background noise, please mute your phone?
Can you repeat six?
Yeah, sure. Can someone please mute their phone who has background noise? Okay, yes. Again, number six is preliminary discussion of Terry Barishas's proposal for sortition to replace elections at Pacifica. And I was suggesting 15 minutes on that. That would just be beginning of what's obviously going to be a much longer discussion that will take, you know, that can't happen tonight. But that was my suggestion. And then an adjourn time of 10:30 Eastern. So the floor is open for amendments, suggestions.
Chair, this is Leanne.
Yes.
Two things. I'll volunteer to be the timekeeper.
Thank you.
Did you send my motion out?
I think I did. Let me make sure that it arrived.
And where did you say you put it now?
To the PAC elect listserv.
No, but the motion on the agenda.
Oh, where on the agenda? It's the last item under the report from the National Election Supervisor, policy on counting blank ballots for quorum. We've always entertained motions during the discussion following the report. Any other changes or comments on the agenda?
This is Redolin.
Yes.
You know, at first I wanted to move Terry's report up. I think it's two spaces. My computer isn't up right now, so I can't see it. But because it seems to me that his report would influence how we would go about electing another, you know, national election supervisor as we rethink this whole process that we just went through. But now that I understand that we're not going to go all the way through the report, you know, I will not make that as a suggestion, but I would just say that I guess we need to in some way allow his report to influence some of the things that we have to decide upon, because none of us has as complete a picture as perhaps he does.
Well, Revlin, I totally agree with you, and that's why I set it up so that all we do first is a couple of housekeeping things, and then we go straight to his report, and then, you know, what to do this year. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I thought I read it that it was a little different, but, you know, maybe I was in a hurry. Okay, well, so I'm in agreement.
Anyone else? Yeah, go ahead, Nia.
This is Nia again. No one else to speak. How about if we make the decision on the next meeting date 5 minutes? Do we really need 10 minutes to decide that?
Yeah, we can try to do it in 5 minutes, sure. It's just I was going from past experience, but sure, let's try it.
Oh, gosh. Okay, 5 minutes.
Okay, any objection to changing that to 5?
Without objection, I'm saying it for Campbell.
Okay. Anything else? Any other changes? Okay.
Are we going to do something about election reform?
Well, that's, I think, what I was intending with number 5, which is a process to evaluate the elections and fix identified problems. I think that's where
that
would come in.
Okay, that's
yeah.
It, yeah.
Did someone just join the call?
Yes, this is Lydia, sorry.
Oh, hi.
Oh, great.
Okay. All right, well, if there's no other objections or changes, then is there any objection to adopting the agenda with a slight amendment of a little less time to set our next meeting date? Okay, hang on. Lydia, yes?
Yeah, I just have a question. Do we have on there the posting of the next NES?
Yes, that's item number 4.
Okay, thank you. That's it.
All right, so is there any objection to approving this?
Did people see Carolyn Burton's email? She said she can't be in the call because she's got the flu, but she objects. Considering the report.
Okay. That isn't on the agenda. Can
yeah.
you go to the agenda?
Yeah, I mean, she's not here. So. All right. If there's no objection, then the agenda is approved. And I need to get off for 1 minute to call Terry to bring him on the call. So the first item is review of minutes. So maybe Nancy and then Jane could walk us through kind of where we're at with the minutes that are pending and you know, waiting for approval? Because I know the story on that. But,
Bob, would you like me to call Terry? Would you like me to call Terry?
Oh, that would be terrific. Okay, thank you, Neil.
Okay, bye.
All right, so
okay,
Jenny,
this is Jane. I'm going to walk you through the December 4th and the December 16th draft minutes that Nancy sent out, if that's okay.
Well, I don't know if you need to walk us through. I just wanted to ask, what were the dates that are pending before December?
Well, right now there's nothing before us except for December 4th and December 16th, and I don't know the answer to your question. So we can either approve or defer December 4th and December 16th.
This is Mia. I'm back, and I got Terry.
Oh, great. That was great.
Yeah.
Okay. So
I work for that. I would like to go to table these. Some of these we got just now.
Do you want to move to table the December 4th and December 16th minutes?
Yeah.
Second,
probably all of them. This way, you know, you get a chance to read them and we can get to the meat of the meeting now.
Okay, so I think that the term we want is postponed. Is there any objection
postponing? I'm sorry. Yeah, postpone.
That's okay. Postponing consideration of those two sets of minutes, December 4th and 16th, until the next meeting? All right, hearing none, then those are postponed. Now, I just wanted to get clear. Does anyone, I know Michael at one point took some notes. Since we're past the end of the year, I just wanted to see if there's any outstanding minutes from any of 2012 that we should get back to at the next meeting to, you know, tidy up our affairs. Does any of you who have taken notes this year know of something that's not yet been approved? I will look after the call, but I just thought someone might know off the top of their head. All right. Well, if not, then I'll look between now and the next meeting, which is the next agenda item, setting the next meeting date. Now, I would recommend that because the bylaws that we really, really hope Pacifica will follow this year call for hiring the National Election Supervisor in March, I would and because, as you'll hear in a little while when we get to this agenda item, that we don't, unless my memory is very flawed, which it could be, we don't have a job announcement from last year to just, like, punch out there and get out in the world. We have a request for proposals. There was a combination of a National Election Supervisor and a firm or an organization to do ballot tabulation. We may need some redrafting. So what I'm saying is I think we need to meet sooner than later. So what I'd like to put out there is the idea of 2 weeks from tonight on Tuesday, January 29th, which there's nothing on the KPFTX calendar. How do people feel about that?
January 29th?
I have a question.
Go ahead, Jane.
The item that you brought up in your lead-in dealing with the announcement of the job announcement for the NES.
Right.
To me, that is contingent upon our agenda item number 6, the discussion of Terry's proposal for a sortition. So if you're suggesting that we're going to talk about that in 2 weeks, I would ask for the timing of when Terry's report is actually going to be accepted by the ED, and because I don't think there's any point of us taking up the topic of a job announcement until Terry's proposal, his final report's been accepted, and the proposal is on the table for discussion.
Well, if I could say, I understand your thinking, Jane, but I understand the bylaws very differently, and that is that any amendment to the bylaws, which this would have to be, that removes a currently existing right of a member, which this does by removing the right to vote, would have to be voted upon by the entire membership before it would go into effect. So this couldn't, even if everyone liked this and wanted this to happen, it couldn't possibly go into effect until next year. So in other words, we are locked into this year's elections, even if we all love this idea.
I mean, what's to keep us from sending out a ballot in February asking for approval of this?
This is Lydia.
Go ahead, Lydia.
Well, number one, Bob is right. But the one thing we absolutely have to avoid is to get fall behind in hiring an NES. So even if we get something, I mean, even if, let's say, everybody agrees about all of this, and we can move forward as fast as you can. If you're familiar with the process and how long it takes 2 months to post, and so then you have exceeded that time limit of hiring the NES, which is what put us in this horrible bind this year of violating the bylaws. You can't hire them the NES in time. So at least let's get the ad going so that it's in there, and if you get something approved before it's time to hire the NES, then fine, but it would be virtually impossible to do that. So I think we would be completely remiss in not moving forward on this. I actually agree with looking at an alternative, and I think that Terry, you know, as we'll discuss later, is certainly a thought-provoking one, but at this juncture, it's not ready to go. And look at the process that it takes. Read the amendments process in the bylaws. There's no way. We have to hire somebody by March. So we at least are obligated to do this. Regardless of how individuals feel, we're obligated to do this, and we have to move forward. So I support the 29.
Time, Chair, time.
Okay, thanks. Are we ready to go to a vote on this, or does anyone want to move to extend the question of the date of the next meeting?
Well, this is Jane.
We're just talking.
Go ahead, Jane. Are you moving to extend?
No, I would support it as long as we're open in terms of what the agenda of that meeting would be.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the agendas are always open.
Okay.
Okay, so let me ask then, is there any objection to our next meeting date being Tuesday, January 29th at 8:30 Eastern? Okay, hearing none, then that's our next meeting.
Hello, Ms. Reveling. Now, when you say this meeting would be the 29th, is WPFW going to have their directors by then, and around that time, that they're going to choose their directors like the next day or something like that?
Yeah, can I speak to that?
Yeah, go ahead, Jane.
We are scheduled on the 30th to elect our directors, but it won't have any influence over our representatives on this committee because it's actually the PMB that is responsible for selecting the director representatives to each committee. So basically, we're okay meeting on the 29th as far as WPFW. It just means that, you know, Ivan and Revlin will continue to be our representatives from the PMB.
That's correct.
I'm saying, so you're saying what was the last thing you said, Jane?
It won't make any difference. The fact that we are going to elect our director representatives on the 30th, it would not have any impact on our committee membership anyway, because it's actually the PMB that chooses what directors sit on each committee.
So I'm just trying to decide, trying to figure out if...
You would still be one of our two director representatives on this committee.
Until the PMB... Okay, all right. It's fine. All right.
Okay, all right. So moving forward, it's now time for the report from the National Election Supervisor. So, Terry, take it away. And, Nia, this would be, why don't you tell us when we get to the 30-minute point, at which time we'll turn to the, we haven't already, to the term limit, WPFW, and the policy on counting blank ballots.
Since there are five items, I was going to give you 10 minutes. Mark.
Yeah, let's see what Terry, you know, how his report goes, and then we'll take it from there. So just let us know when we get to 30.
30 minutes for Terry to speak, or what?
No, for the whole discussion, because I'm sure there'll be a lot of Q&A.
Okay, all right. No,
go ahead, Terry.
Okay, KPFK staff election. Much to my chagrin, we still haven't received the 41 ballots, mixture of listener and staff, that Sol Watson collected and received at the station and sent by priority mail to the P.O. box. And as of this afternoon, it still hadn't arrived, although it was mailed a week ago. So but they are deemed received. In other words, what I ruled was that when the election supervisor receives the ballots, they are received as defined by the bylaws as being received. So they were received in time, so they will be counted and will include calculation of the quorum. We just don't know if we have a quorum because we don't know how many staff versus listener ballots were in that bundle. There actually was a color code on the envelope. There's different shades of yellow for the KPFK elections, but Seoul didn't make note of which were staff and which were listener. So we don't have a quorum yet. We may have a quorum, and we do not know, and hopefully we'll know tomorrow. Go ahead.
I was wondering if you've opened up some of the other envelopes that came.
I don't think they've opened any envelopes yet, no. Not KPFK. The bylaws say that the envelopes aren't to be opened until... I guess they say until the close date, and we are past the close date. So I guess by the bylaws they could be opened now, but I don't think they've opened any. Because, yes, there could be like two staff ballots in one envelope and things like that.
Yeah, I know that several people sent in previously priority mail envelopes or express mail envelopes.
Yeah, those ones, yes, the package envelopes have been opened. For example, there's one that arrived 2 days ago that had three ballots in it. So, yeah, those have been opened.
Okay, gotcha.
And there are also some faxed ballots and things like that, which we're including in the number. So we still have a shot at it, and hopefully tomorrow when they check the P.O. box, that bundle will be there. ESC asked Seoul to see if he could find the tracking number, assuming he set it with some sort of tracking number by priority mail. I guess that's an extra fee to have that added to it. It just doesn't happen automatically. So I don't actually know if there's a tracking number, but he did not reply all on some of this. So some of the information I'm getting secondhand from Seoul to ESC, and then I asked ESC, is there a tracking number? And they said Seoul said there was. But they didn't have it as of this afternoon. So that's it for the KPFK status. Unless there are any questions about that, I'll go on to the public availability of ballot images. On the website, the National Elections website, where the election results are for each of the stations that have results, if you click on round by round results, etc., and you go to a page where you'll see the results for the listener and staff election, and you can click on round by round. But below that, it says you can download a zip file of all the results. In the zip file for each of the elections is a file, the extension of which is .blt. It's the ballot file. And what that has is a record of every single ballot in that election. It's showing the ranking of all the candidates on each of the ballots individually. There's also a file, I think it's called like KPFA listener in. The suffix at the end is .in. And that is simply the configuration file which shows a list of candidates and what their designation is. For example, they're candidates A1, A2, A3, and it has the candidate's name. So A1 is John Smith, A2 is Jane Doe, and so on. So if you go to the BLT file, you'll see a list of ballots. Each line of text is a separate ballot. It will say like A3, A2, A5. That means the voter ranked candidate A3 is their first choice, A2 is their second choice, and A5 as their third choice. So all the ballot information is there, and with that ballot information, somebody who knows Choice Plus Pro or wants to learn it can rerun the election themselves because all the data is there. So that's what we've made available, which is the actual ballot data. And with that, if someone wants to look for correlations, like, let's see, how many people who voted for Jane Smith also voted for John Doe? And you can find out how many ballots are like that. So you can do all kinds of interesting slate-oriented analysis of did people actually follow your preference order that the slates asked them to, and all that kind of stuff. If people want to do that data mining, they can do that from that data. As for the actual graphic images, those have not been posted online. Originally, ESC said they didn't particularly want those up there because they were associated with the actual pins, which allows people to identify their individual ballot, which allows them to be subject to selling votes or coercion, like, I see your pin there and I know what your pin was. But that's not a serious problem this election, I don't think, but the general principle is that you don't open the door for vote buying and coercion by revealing the actual image of the ballot. However, I know it was done in previous specific elections, and people didn't seem to raise a concern about vote buying. And I do not personally object to releasing the ballot graphic images. I prefer to do it with the pins blacked out somehow, and I don't have their TIFF files. And other than laboriously ballot by ballot removing them, I don't know how to do a thing like that that just blanks out the pin number. But maybe ESC can do that. Bob Lederer mentioned to me in a phone conversation a while ago that he, when he was doing one of his observing at the tally, that Frank Fatone of ESC implied that it was okay by him to release the ballot images, which is different than what he had said to me previously. But maybe there's new information or something. But I have not followed up. I meant to. I told Bob I would, but I have forgotten to follow up with ESC to see if they have any ability to blank out the pin number at the bottom of the ballot and release them. And if they can do that, I'd be happy to give those to Otis to post on the website as well. Any questions about that piece?
I have a question.
Go ahead, Nancy.
On the round by round thing, when I looked at when I was eliminated, and I looked like how my votes went to the people that I voted for, it showed that two of my votes went to two other candidates, which I did not vote for at all on my ballot. They got some of my votes, so I just wondered. Am I reading? Am I not understanding it right, or is that?
Yeah, the voters decide where the ballot goes, not the candidates.
Okay.
That means somebody
okay.
who voted. Yeah, somebody who voted for you ranked that next person, candidate, as their next choice. And if a candidate's eliminated, then each individual voter's individual ballot goes to whoever that individual voter picked as their next choice. As long as that candidate has not already been eliminated or already won. So.
Uh huh. Okay, so it doesn't mean that my ballot is the rule.
There actually is
a
voting system that has been designed, but believe it or not, it was designed by Lewis Carroll, who wrote Alice in Wonderland. He was a mathematician and an election theorist. He developed a voting system where the individual candidates would determine if they couldn't win where the ballots that went to them would go. But that's not used anywhere in the world.
Okay.
But it's not a crazy idea. It actually is an idea that has been proposed. I should call him Charles Lutwidge Dodgson is his real name.
Thank you.
This is Bob. I just wanted to clarify that I did have a conversation with Frank Fatone when I was doing the observing, and my recollection is he was quite definite in saying, it's up to Pacifica and Terry. He doesn't have a strong view one way or the other. That's what I heard him say. But obviously you have to verify that and see what he says. So I appreciate your willingness to, if he says yes, that they'll do it, to just go forward. Because I think they're in the interest of transparency, there's people who would like to see it.
The next thing on my report, let's see, in this agenda is policy in terms of term limits of WPFW election.
Sorry, there was one item in between.
Oh, so when LES reports will be available. I thought that they would have sent them in by now. I have been copied on the one from WBAI. So I have the final report from WBAI because I was copied when Terry Graham sent it off to Summer Reese. The other election supervisors, I assumed, would have sent them in by now because they don't get their last paycheck until they send it in by their contracts. And maybe they have sent them in and I just wasn't copied, although I asked them to send them to me. I just wanted to have a complete set. I don't see any reason. I don't see that there's any appropriate reason to keep any of the reports confidential. I believe there was 1 year in the past where the executive director refused to release some sort of report, and I think that's abominable concept. And since I don't have any contractual obligation not to release information, I would think that, of course, I would circulate them to the elections committee. And all, as I said, at this point, all I have is the WVAI one.
All right. Well, thank you for, you know, that commitment. And can you then follow up with the other four and just ask them to send it to you?
Yeah, I will.
And then, as I'm sure you remember, the past years, the NES has always appended the five at the as appendices, you know, to their own report. So for the public record, it's one coherent document.
Yeah, I don't want to hold up my report.
No, I'm not saying you should hold it up, but I'm saying,
but
you know, if the timing works.
Actually.
And what is the time frame you have in mind for your final report?
Well, as soon as we get KPMK staff settled one way or the other, then I want to issue the final report. There have been, I've made a few edit changes to what you folks got, but the only section that's been rewritten substantially was the part about deals with the KPFK missing staff addresses. That part's been largely rewritten. But other than that, it's pretty much as is.
This is Jane. I just have a question for the record.
Sure.
I did not understand what Terry said in terms of the status of KPFK staff elections. I understand that there is a missing package that was sent via priority U.S. mail that you're waiting on.
Yeah.
So there's not basically you're going to just keep waiting until it either arrives or you give up waiting. Is that?
Well, it's.
How many?
There are 41 ballots in the package. We don't know how many are listener and how many are staff. If a large chunk of them are staff ballots, then the staff election can reach quorum. If they're mostly listener ballots and only a few staff ballots, then staff will not reach quorum either. And they are deemed to be received as required in the bylaws by the election date because the local election supervisor received them. So they count. They're valid. They're real. We're going to include them in whatever we do. We just have to physically get control of them from the post office.
So it's like I said, it's basically it's
yeah.
We're waiting until they're either received or it's determined that they're lost. There's not
getting lost in priority mail. Just I've never heard of that, but I guess it could happen. I guess post office can do that.
So, but they were sent a while ago, right?
Yeah, they were sent 7 days ago, mm-hmm. And it's supposed to be 2 to 3 day priority mail. But we do have a story from the KPFA where a ballot was sent priority mail that took 8 days. So
you're hoping they'll be there within a day or so?
I'm hoping they'll be there tomorrow morning, yeah.
Okay, now, Terry, before you go on.
Terry?
Oh, sure, go ahead. Was that Lydia?
Yeah. You know what I'm thinking is that the possibility might be because it's a delivery to a P.O. box, which I know it's acceptable to do that, but there might be a direct inquiry to their post office to see if maybe they got put aside because they don't fit in the box or because, you know, they're those big cardboard things. So.
Well, ESC does elections, you know, with
okay.
organizations that have, you know, a million members. So I think
okay.
that
okay.
I think they can help.
I just wanted to suggest, Terry, before you go on to the two policy issues on our agenda, that I didn't mean for this to be the inclusive list of everything you report on tonight. If there are other things that are listed in your final
No, I, there's nothing else in particular that,
nothing,
that I want
Nothing
to
worth highlighting?
Well, If it's something I wrote in the report, it's there in the report. I'm not going to talk about it unless you've asked questions about it.
Okay, or any...
I mean, I could say, you know, the only other thing I would highlight is that the astonishing thing is that the problems that existed in 2003 when I was National Election Supervisor about member lists seem not to have improved at most of the stations one iota. It's just astonishing. couldn't believe that it's as bad as it was back then. But, you know, it's new people. There's four of the five general managers were new. They had never done an election before. So, anyway.
All right. Well, if no one has any other questions, then I guess we can go.
I have one. I have two questions.
Go ahead, Teresa.
Terry, would you recommend that we have a bylaw revision to lower the number of people required for quorum?
No. I think a 10% quorum requirement is I mean,
that you work with have quorums like that?
Many organizations have no quorum. And what that often means is they do very little effort at informing members, and a handful of people vote, and it's a shadow of democracy, and I don't think it's very democratic at all. So reducing quorum, I don't think the way. I think if you wanted to go that route, I would think what you'd want to do is redefine your membership. I don't particularly like that idea, but the idea of simply saying when people send in their money on the form, there's a place, a box for them to check saying, I want to be a member of the foundation and vote in elections. And if they don't check it, they're not a member and they don't get a ballot. That is, you know, you're at least putting it in their hand in theory. And it dramatically reduces the membership by probably 90%.
I mean, it's just very, very painful. And then when the news gets out, oh, they haven't hit the quorum, it really affects the status or the credibility of the organization. And we might not necessarily be doing anything wrong. I mean, are there other organizations that have such a high quorum?
Yeah, I don't really know that. I mean, I haven't done a... I'm sure there's some political scientist or sociology person who knows that kind of stuff. I just don't know that.
Well, but the people that do the elections, you said they have.
Oh, you could ask ESC. I mean, I've run a number of nonprofit organization elections, and I don't think any of those had quorums of the ones that I've run. Dartmouth Alumni Association, housing co-op, food co-ops, things like that. I don't recall any quorum requirements.
Have you worked with Sierra Club?
I have not. ESC does run elections for Sierra Club.
Okay. You might just ask them.
I'm going to say you guys might as well ask them because I'm done.
All right. And the other question I have is...
I'd like to say something about that before you move on.
1 second, Revlin. Just Teresa, okay. Ask your last question.
My other question is if the local election supervisors do reports that have information in them that might affect or cause a lawsuit because something is said about their work, a staff or a volunteer, for example, will that be, redacted or something when the reports come to the public? And is that perhaps why there was a report that was not made public in the past? Is that taken into consideration?
I certainly haven't thought about that. There are a few individuals I have identified that were not particularly cooperative, but my statements they are not particularly cooperative are fact-based and are not, you know... they're not like allegations of like this person should be fired or anything like that. It's like, you know, it was slow. Certain things were slow to be posted on the website at this particular station, or the executive director's voicemail was full and refused to respond to any of my emails for weeks. Things like that that were simply fact-based.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Revlin.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to say about this whole question about quorum. After having been with a station that didn't meet quorum for 2 years and then this time, and one of the reasons we met it is because we became much more engaged in the community. And the community will support and, you know, respond to that which is responding to it, or something that they feel vested in. And I just think that, you know, before we start writing more rules and more rules, which actually pushes us further and further away, we should maybe turn around and find out other ways we can embrace the community and get involved in the community, so that when it's election time, you know, they look forward to it too.
I'll just say one thing. Based on my knowledge of governmental elections, voter turnout is generally driven by controversy, and people really want somebody to be kicked out of office, or they really want someone to be elected. And when there's, in a municipal government election, when everything's fine in town and there's no controversy, voter turnout plummets. So in one sense, not making quorum is sort of also a sign of there's not a lot of, I mean, at KPFA, there's a virtual war that's been going on for years. And so they all turn out and vote because they've taken sides. And so, yeah, they're engaged in the community because they're struggling.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're engaged. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's like the Obama election.
There's the good side and the bad side of being engaged.
But it seems to me, as a peace organization that, you know, uses radio as an organizing tool, which I think is one way to look at what we do, we can, I mean, there's controversy all throughout the society and everything like that. So there's all, you know, we can begin to shift the controversy so that the controversy can help us build, as opposed to help, you know, tearing down. And even though WPFW is going through a lot of controversy right now, it is helping us to build. You know, I'm not afraid of controversy because it's drama, you know. I mean, you know, it's friction. That's how things get done. So I'm not afraid of controversy. It's only when the outcome is not positive, it's something that you can build upon. So that's all I want to say on it.
Nancy, okay. On the stack.
Go ahead, Nancy.
Okay. Terry, I had said verbally on one of the our meetings in the past, but I didn't send it to you in written form, an email, that two candidates showed me their booklets, their candidate booklet, for the ballot booklets, and they were missing one page. So that means, I don't know, seven candidates were not written on it. And so I just wondered, did you get that kind of complaint from the other stations?
No, yours is the only example that I've heard of that. I checked with ESC and their mail stuffing operation, and they said they hadn't heard that from anybody. And so I think when you do a, you know, 80,000 piece mailing, it's, you know, that can happen, but it does not seem to have been widespread. I never heard of it anywhere else.
So it was not reported. Okay, my second question is, if you knew that this was going to happen, that the management was going to take control of the CART scheduling and playing, and actually the 2 years ago election, we had similar things happen, like, you know, only four CARTs played on a weekend, and 17 CARTs were promised to be played, but they weren't played, and this was reported to Arlene Engelhardt, I mean, by one of the candidates who's now a board member. I mean, if you knew this was going to happen, that the management was going to take over the this unprecedented act of taking over the CART, taking over the election, what would you do to prevent this from happening again? What would you do?
Well, I think that what happened in this time was that the general manager had a conference call with the executive director, the interim executive director, and the program director, and the three of them agreed on a plan, a policy that they were going to use. And if the executive director and the program director and the general manager decide that how they're going to do that piece, I don't think the bylaws give the election supervisors the authority to override the executive director and the general manager and the program director. They're supposed to work cooperatively according to the policy adopted by the Pacific National Board, I don't know what happens if they're not working cooperatively.
Yeah, but there's no proof shown to any of the candidates that such a conversation took place. It's just alluded to by you and alluded to by the program director that such a conversation took place. But there's no proof of it shown to the candidates. And my question is still the same. I mean, if you're going to be our next national election supervisor...
No, I'm not going to be. I'm not applying again.
okay. But, thank you for your hard work this time. But still, I mean... You said it was that it was a small problem, that the improper playing of the cards, and I disagreed because I told you, you know, all those candidate on-air forums were in the morning between 9 and 10. Only that audience heard it. But you said, oh, they had YouTubes, and, well, that's not really a good reason for me because, you know, I think all the stations should do that, YouTube videos with them and Google Hangouts, any kind of way to get to the conversation to the listeners. So I don't think that's a good reason. Do you really think that's a good reason?
No. Those are mitigating things to some extent, which made the failure and the bad behavior less problematic, but the CART scheduling was done in an unfair, bad way, and the other things, when it was finally, you know, revealed how far off it was, general manager agreed to do a lot of compensatory airing of CARTs of candidates who had been underexposed, et cetera, but it was a horrible way to run the election.
Well, did you know that in one morning they just ran a whole bunch of cards one after another, and that's how you compensate? You do it all at one time? That's crazy.
Well,
I mean, you
let
didn't
me,
hear on this side, but...
Nancy, I'm sorry. This is Bob.
I'm sorry, I'm taking too long.
Yeah, we're running short on time, and we have two major discussions to still have, so if I could ask Terry...
Back to the group. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. If I could ask Terry to go ahead and start the issue of the term limits and how that figured into the results of the WPFW election.
All right, well, this is the situation when you have no quorum in one election so that you have to elect your entire LSB, or it could be one class, listeners or staff or both, as at WPFW, and you have to designate who gets a 3-year seat, who gets a 1-year seat, so you can get back on the normal rotation. And the bylaws don't say how to do that. There is a provision in the transitional election from 2003 that says people who get the most votes get the long seats, people who get fewer votes get the shorter seats, but it says expressly that this only applies to the transitional election. So there's nothing in the bylaws for how to do that, but it had to be done. So what that meant is that I sent an email around to the local election supervisor and to the PNB Elections Committee. You folks were copied on the email, and to Arlene Engelhardt, who was the executive director, proposing 3 or 4 different ways that the seats could be divvied up, to divide them into the two classes, 1 and 3-year terms. The options could have included, like, you get your list of 18 listener winners, and then draw lots to see who gets the long seat, who gets the short seat. I could have had them. The reason we had this issue early on is because we were considering the possibility of having candidates declare that they're running for a 1-year seat or declare that they're running for a 3-year seat and actually have 2 listener elections and 2 staff elections at WPFW. We rejected that idea as just too cumbersome, and what happens if, you know, 4 people run for the 1-year seats and 20 people run for the 3-year seats. You know, so it was not clear that would work. So what the system that I proposed to the executive director was that we run the tally, come up with 18 winners for listeners and the 6 winners for the staff. Then we look at the list of winners and say, are any of these people term limited such that they could not serve a 3-year term? If they're term limited by the bylaws, because they're not allowed to serve more than 6 consecutive years, they would automatically get the 1-year seat. If they are not term limited, then we would put them in a pool, and then we'd use the same system as in 2003. The top vote getters would get the three-year seats, and the people who get winning in later rounds of the tally would get the one-year seats. So that's what Arlene Engelhardt approved in August. There was a post, I asked her and the local election supervisor to write up a memo and circulate it, and then Arlene got canned and there's no memo. And so that's my fault largely, in that the policy had been adopted, but nobody besides Arlene, John Bush, and I seemed to know that it was adopted. So then when the election was tallied, we followed the procedure that the executive director had approved, and that's how we got. So there was one listener candidate who was term limited who would have gotten a three-year seat under the 2003 rule, who got a one-year seat, and one same thing happened in one of the staff positions. So that's what happened.
Okay, thank you for that detailed explanation. So at this point, I would like to introduce my motion, which I've just emailed to the committee, and I'm sorry I didn't get it to you all sooner. I know it is somewhat long.
Before we go on, Bob,
yeah.
About what Terry just
said.
Sure.
Go ahead, please. Before I introduce my motion, let's take any questions on what he just said.
Okay, thank you.
Comments. Go ahead, Revelin.
So you're saying that everyone that was elected to a three-year seat had been on the board for less than 3 years. Is that what you're saying?
As far as we're able to tell, yeah. One of the problems at WPFW is that nobody has records. The secretary, the general manager, nobody has a record of when people were elected, and it's incredibly frustrating. But that's the best that we were able to tell, yes.
Okay. All right. There's one person I'm not sure about, but that's fine. I'll find out. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other questions or comments for Terry on this issue? Okay, hearing none, then let me introduce my motion. And before I read it, let me just say that Terry is correct that he did circulate the sort of broad outlines of the policy in July to the committee. And I know I, for one, just completely missed it. There was a lot of emails flying back and forth at that time, and I just overlooked it. So I'm sorry I did, but because I would have spoken up at the time. But, and then, you know, as he said, since it wasn't highlighted, it was just kind of like, these are some possibilities we're considering. We all just, I think, lost track of what he finally adopted because he, you know, well, he just explained the communication breakdown that he didn't share it with us, not deliberately. In any case, with that as a prelude, I'll just say that, you know, I respectfully disagree with the policy decision, and I think it's quite unfair, and that's why I've put together this motion.
I have something I want to mention for the record.
Sure, go ahead.
After you read this.
Oh, after? Okay.
It doesn't matter, before or after.
Well, go ahead.
Very important. Okay. In the 2007 election, 2009, Gloria Turner was elected to a three-year term. 2010, Renee Asteria was the election coordinator, and she unilaterally, on her own, as far as I could tell, without consulting with anybody, determined that Gloria had improperly been given a three-year term, and she just ruled that Gloria's term was over after 1 year because she had reached that three-year limit. I don't know what your I haven't quite digested your motion yet, Bob, but I thought that what she did was very improper. So I appreciate what Terry did by actually looking at the big picture before he declared the results. So basically, Renee said, I don't care what Les Radke did. He may have ruled that she had a three-year term, but he was wrong because, no, she's already reached her 6 years. She's done. Anyway, so I'm not going to go on with your motion and figure out what you want to do with it.
Okay, thanks. All right, so here it is. whereas the National Election Supervisor adopted a policy in the 2012 WPFW elections to award only a one-year delegate seat to anyone whose term-limited tenure would preclude them from serving a full three-year term, regardless of whether their vote total would have otherwise led them to, led them to obtain a three-year term. And whereas in the 2007 election, the National Election Supervisor ruled that any candidates who would be term limited before the end of another three-year term could nonetheless run for said term, provided that they resigned when they reached their six-year mark. And whereas the Pacifica bylaws provide no authority for the National Election Supervisor or the Executive Director to treat any candidate in a disparate manner that awards one candidate a shorter term than another who won fewer votes, resolved that the Pacifica National Board Elections Committee strongly urges the National Election Supervisor to change the policy for the 2012 WPFW elections so as to uphold the cornerstone standard that candidates are awarded three-year or shorter terms based solely on their relative ranking in the final vote count. And then a separate point for us to adopt would be further that the committee recommends the Pacifica National Board adopt a policy for future elections that in any delegate election in which all seats in either the listener member or staff member category are vacant, three-year terms shall be awarded to the highest vote getters up to the number of seats usually available in that year's election, and one- or two-year terms, dependent on the election year cycle, to the next highest vote getters for the remaining available seats. This shall include any candidate who would become term-limited during the upcoming one-, two-, or three-year term, although said person shall be required to resign as a delegate as soon as they have completed six consecutive years of delegate service. So that's the motion. And let me add the reference to the executive director. I want to make that a little sharper and say that the executive director really should not have been opining or, you know, weighing in on this at all. Because this is really improper in the entire scheme of elections at Pacifica. Anything that's this fundamental about who wins and who loses, even when it's done before the votes are tallied, it still is not, you know, the bylaws are very clear that the ED should not be involved in that. That's why we have an independent NES, and that person should exercise their independent authority to decide what's right. So that would be, you know, a note to future NESs that they shouldn't even ask the ED what they think of that policy. They should just enact it. You know, if they want legal advice, that's a different issue. But as far as is this okay, I think that's not the right relationship between the NES and the ED. So I'll stop talking, and the floor is open for questions or comments.
This is Lydia.
Lydia, yes.
And reference to the fact that
Mm-hmm. Okay, got Lydia,
Lydia?
Yeah. Lydia, could you talk slowly because your line is funny.
Okay.
Go ahead, Lydia.
Oh, okay. excuse me. So.
Oh, it's better now. It's better. Okay, go ahead.
I'm just talking louder. Okay. So the question is. And Bob, you can tell me what the intent was. Is it clear enough, if in fact that's the intent, that alternative of the 1 or 2 year terms is specific to whether you're terming out or not? In other words, does that phrase that you mentioned earlier in the motion have to be repeated? And I'm asking the group, does it make it clear enough? And was that your intent?
I'm sorry, I'm not quite grasping your question. Could you?
Okay, the 1 and 2, the shorter term comes in to play when you're termed out, correct? Or when you served out as an alternate specific other term, a partial term?
Yeah, right. If your 6 years happens to fall between elections, which does happen from time to time and has happened at several stations where somebody, you know, filled an incomplete term that, you know, when someone else resigned, and so then their 6-year mark is in the middle. So they might want to stand for a 3-year term, knowing full well at the time they stand for that election that they'll only be able to serve legally, let's say, whatever, 1 year, 1.5 years, 2 years and 3 months, or whatever the case may be.
Right.
And that's happened many times, and then people do, in fact, resign when they...
No, I understand all that. I'm saying, in the motion, does that seem clear to everyone when you get into offering the alternative of the lesser terms, so the 1 to 2 year terms, or does that have to be reiterated, those specific conditions, as opposed to leaving it up to anyone? So I'm asking the group, not you.
Right, I understand.
Okay.
This is Jane. I want to speak to the motion.
Well, hold on. Lydia is asking a very specific question about whether the language is clear. Does anyone want to address that question only?
Yes, because I support the motion. Just
okay.
Be-